Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Brian Lowry with the Wichita Eagle.
I'm Jonathan Shorman with the Topeka Capital Journal.
What's happening? Stephen Caranda here, Kansas Public Radio.
Looks like another special edition of State House Blend. Here comes the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. As we gather here in the KCUR production studio, I want to mention that it's Memorial Day weekend, so I am especially indebted to all of our panel of journalists for making it over to talk about the session that seems to never end. Yes, you are. Go ahead and invoice me for that. We like to get to know our guests a little bit here, so before we get into the issues, I want to go around the table. Tell me how many sessions you've covered in Topeka and where you were before your current posting.
This is my second session in Topeka, although this session has felt like five. And before I started with the Eagle, I was actually completing my master's at Northwestern University.
Jonathan?
Yeah, this is my first session here in Topeka. Ooh. But I will say I did two sessions in Missouri in Jefferson City for the Springfield Newsleader, so... the legislature isn't, it's kind of old hat to me, but it's a new cast of characters this year.
Stephen Caranda?
This is, I believe, my fifth session at the Kansas legislature, but as Brian was saying, some of them count as more than one. So I'm going to say I have the equivalent of 7.5.
He's an old, wizened man.
And before this, I covered the legislature in Mississippi for Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
Yeah, so apparently covering the Kansas legislature, we count that in dog years.
Yes.
Brian had a great piece. Before we also move on to some of the issues, he had a great piece this week about the secrecy of the Brownback administration. I want you to tell us about the story, why it took so long to report, and how you think it fits into the bigger picture of what's happening in Topeka. And then I want to get you guys' thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, I had a story that came out in the weekend about the governor's use of private emails, and then I had a story come out this week about the email records regarding his former chief of staff, David Kenzinger, who is now a lobbyist. And it took me about 8 months to get those records. I had an interview with...
Not because it was kept on a private server.
No. As far as I know, not because of that. But I made the request in October after the governor had said in an interview that he rarely speaks to Kenzinger. And Kenzinger's the guy who many people have claimed has an outsized influence.
David Kenzinger, we should say, in Kansas politics.
Yes, David Kenzinger. And so I made the request, and they gave me an initial reply saying, we've received your request, and we will get back to you with how much it will cost. And I would check in weekly, sometimes daily, to get the price figures. Did not get those till January. It turned out to be more than my paper was willing to pay. So we amended the request in February, and we did not get the records after a lot of back and forth until May. And the records, a lot were withheld because they cited there's various exemptions in the open records law. And so while we could see that David Kenzinger had advised on the governor's trip to China, had been on emails regarding last year's controversial healthcare compact bill. There's a lot we don't have because they invoked an exemption that goes towards policy drafts, meaning when people are discussing policy and they're saying, how about we do this? How about we do that? Those can be protected. They cited a personnel exemption, meaning that there were conversations about personnel matters. And they cited a third exemption, which my attorney told me is so broad it could literally cover anything, which is an exemption that protects communication between a private individual, in this case, assumably David Kenzinger, and a public agency, in this case, the Brownback administration. And between the two stories, what we found in these records is that the governor prefers to communicate on private emails, and he later then told us that he's been doing that since he was a senator. And we also just see that there's a lot of unanswered questions about how much influence this paid lobbyist has. He's, you know, the way contract lobbying works is you get clients and they you're on a contract with them just like an attorney would be or an accountant would be, and then you try to influence policy. And so in this case, we have someone whose job it is to be a lobbyist on behalf of various companies and organizations is also an informal, unofficial advisor to the governor still.
Right. So now that we know that, Jonathan, tell me, what, if anything, does this – how does this influence the session? How does it put it in any new context for you?
Well, yes and no. Yes, in the sense that it just – it's one more story that demonstrates that we aren't going to get real CORA reform this year, even though –
Kansas Open Records Act.
Kansas Open Records Act, even though we did see a little bit of progress where Attorney General Derek Schmidt, he issued a legal opinion basically saying that private emails on could not be – even if they are about government business, would not be subject to the Open Records Act. But he went on to say, even though this is the legal opinion I have about the current law, I'm going to propose an amendment to the law that would essentially cover those private emails. It does not appear like that will go anywhere this session. Obviously, lawmakers are preoccupied with the budget. But maybe next year there might be a little bit more momentum with that. At the same time, it hasn't really altered the dynamic because we the initial Kinzinger email, Sean Sullivan, the budget director, story kind of broke earlier in the year where we found out that Sean Sullivan, the state budget director, had been sending giving David Kinzinger and another lobbyist, Mark Dugan,
who's Brownback's campaign manager.
Sure. Early access to the state budget, or at least details of the state budget. So that was that's been in everyone's mind during the whole session. And it would be interesting to be a fly in the wall with conversations between lawmakers and Dugan and Kinzinger after that broke, as far as, you know, do these lawmakers feel manipulated now, knowing that these guys were maybe trying to work them, but all had knowledge of the budget that maybe even some of those lawmakers didn't have.
And they're the two lobbyists for the Club for Growth, Kinzinger and Dugan. And that's actually an organization that is running ads statewide against rolling back the controversial business income exemption that some lawmakers, including the Senate president, have said, maybe we need to take a look at this.
Yeah, Stephen, I'm interested. You've covered more sessions in Topeka now than any of us in here. Does it feel more secret? Does it feel more closed door than previous sessions?
Well, let me say this. I think most politicians are going to be a little more closed door when things are not going so hot. And right now in Kansas, we have, after making these big tax cuts with the promise of economic growth, while we are getting, you know, job growth, we are having some job growth, it's not clear that we're having way more than maybe we would without the tax cuts. And we've basically grenaded our budget in some ways, whereas now we're trying to fill this $400 million budget hole when we are even having some job growth. So, you know, if things were going gangbusters, I think all the leadership and the governor would be much more willing to talk about how great it's going and would be much more interested in talking to the media. But when things are not going great, you know, I think probably the last thing a lot of them want to do is have to be constantly fielding questions of, you know, why aren't we seeing more growth? Why are we in these budget troubles?
The governor had a bill signing ceremony yesterday where whether intentional or not, it was probably the greatest thing ever if you want to get away from answering reporters' questions. He signed a bill meant to bring Uber back to Kansas, and then he got into a car, an Uber car, and he drove away not to be seen or heard from again.
An Uber car with Nebraska plates.
Yeah, with Nebraska plates. But it was just this great move where he was able to, like, if he could do that every time reporters want to ask him a question, just get into a car and drive
every
away.
Every press conference will now be held next to a car.
And all I need is the Uber app.
Get the chopper apparently running.
I'm wondering if anybody this session, lawmaker, somebody from the administration, has distinguished themselves. This has been very contentious. In some ways, it has a certain Keystone Cop feel about it. There's plans that are run in. There's plans that are, you know, then they're pulled back. Bills are supposed to be run on the floor, then they're pulled back. So given the confusion that is going on, I'm wondering if anybody's distinguished themselves. Brian?
In the sense, do you mean on the budget debate or in general?
In general, right? Has there been some leadership? Has there been some big thinking going on that that we just don't see because it's obscured by trying to balance the budget?
I mean, there's a lot of interesting dynamics going on. I think Senator Jeff Longbein, who was it's kind of interesting. He was the guy who had to bring on the Uber issue all the different parties together and managed to make peace. It was almost like negotiating peace in the Middle East. And so that was a pretty big win for Jeff Longbein. Derek Schmidt actually helped him out in that as well. I don't know if you can say they've distinguished themselves, but it's been very interesting to see a couple Wichita Republicans who are very conservative lawmakers speak out against the tax structure, a tax structure that many of them voted for. I'm thinking about Senate President Susan Weigel, Tax Chair Les Donovan, Marvin Klebb from
Johnson
Park.
County, right?
And I mean, these are not moderate Republicans. These are the conservatives, and they're talking seriously about rolling back this controversial exemption. So far, that hasn't happened though, and I'm not sure they're going to have the 63 votes they need in the House and the 21 votes in the Senate they need. But the fact that they're talking about it at all is pretty interesting because it really shows some independence from the administration.
Yeah. Jonathan, anybody in your mind have distinguished themselves, have put themselves out and showed some real leadership this session?
Tough question. I think it is a little tough, especially because we don't know how this kind of budget crisis is going to resolve itself. You know, it's quite possible that we'll have, you know, maybe the White Knight shows up at the 11th hour to tell us what the deal is going to be. But it seems like Brownback isn't interested in playing that role. And I'm not sure if there's anyone else who can really fill that role. But I would kind of go back to what Brian said about Susan Weigel, the Senate president. You know, deciding to go public with her opposition to keeping in place some of these business income tax
or at least exemption, open-mindedness to amend them.
Yeah. You know, that's something that she felt pushback from Club for Growth, from other very conservative groups. Kansas Chamber of Commerce, who has been consistently against any kind of revision to the 2012 policy. And so that was it goes to kind of her credentials as a conservative. And it potentially, you know, if several years down the road, we don't know what kind of higher office, if she wants a higher office, but you could see people calling back to the debates that are happening right now and potentially using some of those positions against her.
Yeah. The rhetoric is kind of interesting, too, because she's using a argument that Paul Davis shied away from in the campaign.
A fairness argument.
Yeah, the tax fairness argument.
Right, right.
She's basically arguing that we created an unfair system where business owners don't have to pay taxes, certain types of business owners, while employees do.
Right. Well, and before we go on, I just need to clear up and say I'm one of those businesses in Kansas. I do some freelance work, and I'm one of those LLCs that don't pay any taxes. I just always feel like I need to fess up to that. I want to go back to something that Jonathan just a second ago, and that is who is might be setting themselves up for a higher office. You mentioned Susan Weigel. I mean, is there a statewide campaign? Stephen, what are your thoughts on this? Is there somebody who is looking to that we know is looking to set themselves up for a statewide run or move themselves up to a speaker or president of the Senate? Who's maneuvering right now?
I have not heard any obvious or even rumors on those types of things. Maybe I could get some insight from you guys. But we definitely see people doing some things they could hang their hat on. We're talking about Representative Susan Weigel. I would even add Senator Susan Weigel. I would also add Representative Mark Hutton to one of these people who's distinguished himself. He's a Republican, a business owner, but he was the one who stood up in the House Tax Committee and said, you know, these business tax cuts are not giving most businesses enough money to hire people. So it's not creating the jobs we had hoped for many businesses, and it's costing us $200 million. And he himself is a business owner who would raise effectively his own taxes. I would also say that maybe to your question, Sam, who could be kind of positioning themselves for a future run, I would look at some of the people who aren't changing pace. For example, you have, you know, Susan Weigel kind of now saying, well, let's look at this. But you have some of the conservative Republicans like Republican Mark Rhodes in the House and Republican Kasha Kelly in the House, two people who used to be in leadership positions, had some friction with the speaker, are now not in leadership, and they are coming hard against increasing these business taxes. They're saying this is working, it's going to work, we need to stick to this, and we need to cut more in the budget. So in a couple years or a year, whenever we're looking for a new speaker, whenever Ray Merrick's second term is up, I can't remember right now. This is his first year of his second term?
This is his second term. Yeah, first year of his second term.
So, you know, in 2 years when we're looking for a new speaker, they could be people who would be willing to stand up for speaker or leadership position and say, look, I stuck to my conservative credentials on this. That won't obviously fly with everyone. There'll be a lot of people who will say, well, that didn't help us get through the budget situation. But they can point at that and say, look what I stuck to. I didn't fold on this.
Yeah. Other names.
Kris Kobach. Yeah. Now wait. Let's Kris Kobach and Derek Schmidt are two guys who I would not be surprised to run for governor or to run for if a you know one of the congressional seats became in play. So one they both have been guys who've pushed legislation, right? Kobach had some big victories this week. The biggest one, of course, was
new prosecutor.
The legislature the prosecutorial power, which is he's been pushing for years. And so, if the governor signs that, I think he's already signaled he's going to start investigating in July.
Yeah. So I talked to Kobach earlier this week after the House had a vote on that bill, and he told me that he has 100 plus cases of supposed double voting where someone's voted in the 2014 general election in Kansas and has been found to allegedly have voted in another state. Now, he says this is based off of matching the last four digits of the Social Security number, first and last name and date of birth. Now, he has to go – he said the final step would be comparing the signatures on the voter rolls. But apparently, if Brownback signs this bill, Kobach – he's kind of signaling he thinks he has 100 potential prosecutions.
I can see this going a couple different ways because we had prosecutors arguing against this change, saying, look, we've looked at these cases, and either they're people who maybe should have known the law a little better, but they inadvertently violated the law, or they say for some of these cases...
And it's important to point that out because oftentimes in criminal law, you have to show intent.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that there wasn't a malicious intent in some of these. And also in some of them, they say these people are being prosecuted in other areas for this. So if Kris Kobach is... you know, coming up. And if he's busting people who legitimately broke the law and did it maliciously, that's going to look good. But if he ends up pursuing cases against maybe an elderly person who voted twice and thought maybe they could, that's not going to look good.
Yeah, and the U.S. Attorney's Office, by the way, said earlier in the session that Kobach has not sent a single case, has not referred a single case to them. That is an office that could prosecute voter fraud for whatever that's worth.
Any other names? Anybody else looking to position themselves?
Well,
who wants to move up?
One thing I would add is we haven't mentioned a single Democratic name because Democrats.
Well, let's bring them in.
They have, of course, big time minorities in both chambers. They have so many fewer numbers, and so it's going to be interesting to see if they come into play in this tax debate, if they can swing their weight, because most of them are saying we're not going to vote for anything that doesn't do a major overhaul of these 2012 tax cuts. The thing is, though, there are also some moderate Republicans who are in that same boat. Mm-hmm. So the question will be, when they start putting up tax plans on the floor of the chambers, is there going to be enough moderate Republicans and Democrats to create a big enough block to defeat something that doesn't do enough to overhaul these 2012 tax cuts? It could be that there will be enough moderates and conservative Republicans that like what they come out with and Democrats won't be needed. So Whether they need to come into play and whether they can swing their weight around is going to be interesting to see.
Well, we have seen that coalition, right, on the Professional Negotiations Act, where they were trying to drastically
– Even a few years ago, building the budget, it was crafted by Democrats and moderate Republicans.
Right, but we've seen it this session where they beat back an attempt to drastically change the way teachers negotiate, and you got enough Democrats and moderate Republicans to beat that back. So the coalition is certainly – possible, but we're waiting for the details.
We don't know exactly how the numbers are going to shake out because this is a new legislature, so we don't know how some of these Republicans are going to come down on these votes.
Right, right. We hear, and I think I just read an editorial this week from the Hayes Daily, and we've been hearing it the whole session, accusations that the legislature has been wasting their time on guns, on abortion, any number of social issues when they should have been focused completely on the budget and focus completely on trying to figure out how to balance it. Do you think that's fair? Budgets almost always wait to the last minute, but I'm wondering your thoughts on
one thing I would say is not to defend legislators, but not to attack them either. Building the budget and a tax plan is incredibly difficult process. Mm-hmm. It's an incredibly long process. So there is some legitimacy to say they have been working on it. Maybe they didn't work as fast as some people would like. But while they're doing that, not every legislator is in those discussions.
Sure.
So other legislators can be tinkering around with other things. And that doesn't necessarily mean they aren't paying attention to the budget or aren't paying attention to taxes.
Yeah. Legislatures are – they're designed and set up to do multiple things at once. That's why you have committees on various topics. They're all working at the same time. They all can't be working on the budget at the same time. I think one of the other critiques I've found that's maybe more interesting is that this idea, and I heard this from Senator Hensley, the Senate Minority Leader, yesterday, is he was criticizing Republicans for not, especially on the tax committees, the tax and budget committees, for not beginning serious work on the budget before the consensus revenue estimate came out in April, essentially saying that we waited until we had it's commonly called the CRE. We waited until we had the CRE. The final number of revenue that the state is expected to bring in next year before we started formulating these tax plans. We could have been doing a lot of the groundwork earlier, and maybe we wouldn't still be here right now.
The flip side of that is you don't even know what ground you have to build on until you have the updated numbers.
There's conservatives.
Right, the CRE always important, but particularly – but even more important this year when they were trying to figure out how much money they need.
Yeah. There's conservatives who have made that same argument. Mark Rhodes has made that argument that there should have been some of these discussions should have been started earlier, that we didn't know exactly how big the hole would be, but we knew there would be a hole, and so that there were some serious discussions about spending and taxes that have been left – until now, we're kind of
the basically the philosophical arguments could have happened earlier. We could have decided: do we want a sales tax plan? Do we want an income tax plan?
Do we want a cut?
And then we could have deciding the details,
and then fill
right
in
now.
The numbers later.
Yeah.
It's waiting for Godot right now. Right now, we're waiting for Godot. We'll see if he shows up. The three of us will keep showing up to the State House and waiting just in case the budget arrives.
All right, I want to go around and get a quick answer here. They have to have a budget by July 1st, obviously. So we're now 6 days into overtime, and this is Memorial Day weekend, so they're off on Monday, back on Tuesday. So we're already 6 days deep. When do you give me a prediction of when they're going to have a budget?
So my birthday is June 7th. And I will be turning 29. I think I will be 29 years old when they have a budget.
Jonathan?
I'm going to go with June 12th. That's about, I think, 3 weeks from now.
I think I would have to go with something similar because next week, it's a short week. The biggest thing we can hope for next week is the Senate maybe passing their tax bill or it going down in flames, which could be more likely. And then, at least maybe – 2 more weeks is a good guess after next week to put something together.
All right, middle of June. Seems to be the consensus estimate,
which is pretty unusual to be going that late.
Right? I think there's a good chance this will be
it'll be a contender.
Longest session in history. I believe.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The longest session so far has been 2002, which was 107 days.
And we're at like 95-ish when they
96.
Come back? 96.
Yeah.
Good chance.
All right, before we wrap it up, once more around the table, final thoughts on the session. Anything that you'd like to say? Nothing?
We're just we're
all
exhausted,
want to go on vacation.
Yeah.
You guys are tired of talking about
this? This session has been there was a lot of waiting for them to really get into the serious work, and now it really is all happening.
And now how many unsuccessful tax committee meetings can you sit through before you lose it?
It's challenging.
You guys are right. I have to say, you guys, and I follow you all on Twitter, and I retweet you like I get paid to retweet you. But you guys are running out of ways to say nothing's happening.
Yeah. Well, the lobbyists are starting to cut off. Some lobbyists have told me this. They're going to cut off the free food and drink, right? This is
the box lunches that pile up.
In Kansas law, there's limits for gifts that lobbyists can give lawmakers. There's limits on when they can contribute to campaign funds. But there is no limit on food and drink that they can buy them throughout the session. And now a couple of lobbyists are like, all right, we're cutting off the free lunches. We're cutting off the dinners. We're cutting off the cocktail hours. You guys need to get to business.
Outstanding. Thanks again. Great discussion. I appreciate you, every one of you coming in. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. Our friends over there on Up to Date also make a little room for us on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. We're going to be back to our regular format next week, and really, I guess, pretty deep into the summer now that if we believe everybody here.
I wonder how many more of these all State House Reporter episodes you could have before they're done.
Well, you know, it used to be there was a lot more. You know, you guys are getting to be like the only State House Reporter, so I guess maybe we might have to have you back a lot. But we're going to be back to our regular format, so if you want to be our citizen voice, go ahead and email me. I'm at sam@kcur.org. And if you're a fan of the Twitter, I'll bet you are a fan of the Twitter, you can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. Usually, we give our legislative guest the prerogative of choosing the music that we roll out on. But since you're all guests, we're going to go around the table. You're going to give me your favorite song, and I will choose. Brian.
Let's go with Rudy Can't Fail by The Clash.
Early favorite.
Rebellion by Arcade Fire.
I wasn't expecting this, and I don't know if this is the right name of the song, but because it's going to be the dead of summer, I'm going to choose the song Hot Town, Summer in the City.
We have a winner, Stephen Caranda.
Yes.
Thank you all for being here. I'm Sam Zeff.
Cha-ching.
I'll see you next time.
Hot Town, Summer in the City, back of my neck.